plenty of decks don't get to draw three cards for one mana.
Well, I mean, all the good ones do.
Hi, I'm Jake.
And I'm Matt.
And welcome back to another week of Cantrip Cartel, the podcast that is slowly but consistently transitioning towards a pre-modern podcast, so I might have to go back and re-update all of our descriptions of our podcasts with Magic content. But I'm Jake, we got Matt here, and we're going to talk about, I don't think we decided yet, so we'll just do our normal weekly start with Matt. How you doing today?
I'm doing all right. Had a
Matt,
fine day at work, I guess.
Matt has, in a very adult fashion, said that he probably will not go play paintball this weekend because there is a video game coming out.
Yes, I absolutely said that, and I have no shame about that at all. And I guarantee you, if Dark Souls 4 came out, and I was like, no. Hey, Jake, you want to hang out this weekend? You'd be like, nah, I'm good.
I absolutely... Well, it's not just hang out. It's we're going to go play paintball, which is super fun. And with it being opening weekend, there's no walk-on fee. You still have to pay rental and all that, but there's no... Which I think the walk-on fee was like $25 or $35, so it's not a ton of money. But I... Considering it comes out on Thursday... Does it come out Thursday or like Thursday night?
Comes out on the 29th. So technically Thursday, yeah.
So in a world... If we were to draw the direct comparison where, hey, Jake, do you want to do something on the weekend? Let's do something relatively special, because we don't go play paintball that often. And there's a video game coming out 3 days before... Or 2 days before that. I do not think I would offhand deny the request, but
yeah,
it
but
also doesn't matter. It's not...
You're twisting the scenario a little bit in your favor, because just because it comes out on Thursday doesn't mean I'm going to get to play it on Thursday. Like,
that's
I work all day till 5, and then I have to hang... I don't have to, but I hang out with my wife in the evenings. The first day I get a chance to actually sit down and play it is Saturday.
And I also... I hope it comes up, because I'm eager to see what my actual genuine response would be. But, like, you're going to have the game for the next... Presuming you buy it, because all of this is the presumption that the game comes out, it's good, and you end up buying it. You're going to have the game for the next, like, 30 years.
Yeah, and something tells me you'll have your paintball guns for the next 30 years.
possibly, but it won't be opening weekend.
Nope, but the opening
cheaper.
Weekend thing doesn't... The cheaper thing doesn't mean anything to me at all. Like,
oh.
And I'm not trying
just
to, like,
waving,
flex on you or anything.
Matt's just over here waving dollar bills around.
No, it's just the simple fact of the matter is it's going to cost me quite a bit of money to go there, and saving $20 one way or the other just doesn't... That's not why I would or would not go. I'd go based on whether or not I want to go. I mean, I'm not saving any money by playing Final Fantasy VII. It's going to cost me $60 or $70
yeah.
to do that. It'll cost me more to play the video game than it will to... go paintballing. Money's
yeah.
not the issue at all. It's just bad timing.
What is the walk-on rate, out of curiosity? Yep, $25. $25
and
is your all-day air walk-on.
In my defense, you don't have to dox yourself if you don't want to, but how old are you, Jake?
I am 29. I turned 30 this year.
So, I have been waiting for this release for 21 years.
Okay. Are you saying that's when the first game came out? Because you were not
no.
waiting for the remake
no.
to come out when the
that's
first
the,
one came out.
That's the thing. I'm waiting. Let me
not,
finish.
They did not tease this game in 2002.
Yeah, they fucking did.
No.
Are yes,
you be
they
serious
did.
Serious here.
This game came. Final Fantasy VII came out in, I believe, 1997, and a few years later, not a few, but like when the PlayStation 2 came out, they completely redid the intro to Final Fantasy VII and released it. And, like, they started to... Now, they did that, and then they were like, oh, no, we could never remake Final Fantasy VII. It'd be too big of a project. But, like, that... They put it in everyone's head back in, like, 2003.
Oh,
100%
gonna...
they did. It's in fucking magazines, dude. Like, it is
yeah,
a
but,
published
so...
fact, and I've been waiting for this... For them to remake this game on this scale since that happened.
When did it first get confirmed?
I mean, that they
because
were remaking,
like,
Final Fantasy VII?
Because, I mean,
it's
like,
been at
I
least could, 10 years.
Because, like, they've been hinting at a Bloodborne PC port for the last 9 years, but like until it gets confirmed it's in production, I haven't been waiting for, like, I haven't been waiting for Bloodborne to come out on PC.
There's a huge difference.
So this Final Fantasy VII, I just Googled first confirmed. I haven't read this yet, so it might defend you, it might defend me, I don't know. Officially announced in 2003 with the reveal of Final Fantasy VII Advent Children, the series core products are 3 video games and 1 film. Alongside these tie-in products are spin-offs. Is that talking about Final Fantasy
VII? No, that's not. So that's talking about... So there was the movie, which was a sequel to Final Fantasy VII. They released a movie. Because that's the thing, dude. Like, Final Fantasy VII didn't just come out in 1997 and everybody forgot about it. It's actually the biggest Final Fantasy. It's got a ton of other games, like spin-offs and shit like that. So around that time, they had Advent Children, the movie, which was fine. Like, a lot of people like it. I thought it was worth watching, but I'm like, eh, whatever. Because it's got a ton, just a ton of anime tropes that I discussed last week where I don't care. Like, that kind of stuff does nothing for me. So, like, I'm more interested in the story, but, like, yeah, whatever. Advent Children is its thing. Then there's also Dirge of Cerberus, which was a first-person shooter where you play as Vincent Valentine. And then there's also Crisis Core, which I believe was the game where you played as Zack from Final Fantasy VII.
So, according to this, the Final Fantasy VII remake, which this is, I'm assuming what Rebirth is the remake.
Well, there's the remake and then there's Rebirth. They're breaking... They kind of, to go back to what they were talking about in 2003, Final Fantasy VII, the remake of the whole game, is being split into 3 games.
Okay. Like, so the remake was announced at Sony Conference 2015. It looks like Rebirth entered production in November of 2019.
Yep.
So, are you flipping a lighter?
Yeah.
I fidget. You don't even smoke.
No, I just... A, I like lighters, and B, I fidget. I've got, like, 20 lighters in my basement.
So, Rebirth entered production, so... It probably was confirmed before that. Although, I guess... Probably between 2017 and 2019, it probably got announced or confirmed in some capacity.
Rebirth was effectively confirmed once they did the remake. Once they did remake. Because,
so,
like...
Be closer to 2015.
Yes.
So, okay. So, we feel comfortable. You were there. I wasn't. You feel comfortable that, yeah, Rebirth was confirmed probably around 2015.
De facto, yes. Because, like, because of what it is. Yeah.
That's a long time. That's a long time to wait for a game.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
Almost as long as we've been waiting for the next Harry Dresden book.
Like, I mean, that's almost as long as we've been friends.
Yeah.
Like, so the entire time you've known me, pretty much, I've been waiting for the game that comes out in 3 days.
And you're saying you couldn't wait one more day.
I'm saying you shouldn't make me wait one
more
day.
Oh, I'm not going to make you. I can't make you do anything. I don't give a shit. You do what you want.
And no, like, I'm 100% serious. Like, when that teaser came out, that is what made me... I've been waiting since that day. Like, I lost my fucking mind. Like, if my parents were around, they could attest to this if they would remember. But I got that fucking magazine. I... found the video online. Like, me and Derek and Joe, we were all like losing our shit because we thought they were remaking Final Fantasy VII. Because that's one of the fundamental things that, like, the biggest critique of Final Fantasy VII is the graphics. And it's like, I think there's a certain charm there. I grew up playing it. I can see how other people look at it and go, wow, that's really ugly. Because, like, it was really their first step into making a JRPG with 3D graphics. And trying to make them look good.
It looked like Mario, didn't it?
I mean, you can look it up. They look like Legos. Like, when you're on the overworld map.
Yeah, it looks like... the graphics look like... What's that Mario 3D game? The first Mario 3D game.
Yeah.
What's that one?
I think it's just Super Mario or Mario 64.
Yeah, Mario 64. Yeah, it looks like Mario 64 characters.
Back in the day. So, like, as soon as that came out, we were like, oh my God, they're doing it. And then they're like, nope, we're not going to do it because it was so huge of a project. But I've been waiting since that day. And I've just been like, and that, to be fair, that's the only reason it's happening is because people just demanded this game get remade. Mm-hmm. And Square was like, no, we're not going to do it. No, it would take too long. No, it would be too busy or it would be too expensive. Like, I mean, it's a huge fucking project.
They started doing it in 2009. It took 4 years. That's a really fast game development cycle.
Well, it took 4 years. Well, you have to look at everything they've done. They developed an entire engine to make the game. If I remember correctly, it's called Crystal Dynamics or something like that.
They're running on a unique engine?
Yeah. Jeez. Square does its own thing.
That's a lot of work.
And then when the remake was released, the remake is only the first like 5 to 10 hours of the game. It's one town that they expanded into, you know, a lot more shit.
Okay, so real quick. Google says Final Fantasy VII Rebirth is running on Unreal 5.
Okay, then they must have changed it then. And that's, you know, whatever. But like...
Oh, wait, no. It's using it. This says... When was this? So 5 months ago, in September 2023, there is a post. I'm just on Reddit, so anyone who wants to fact check this. None of this is fact checked. But Xenosaga on Twitter said it's confirmed Final Fantasy VII Rebirth is using a customized Unreal Engine 4. But you're saying that... So for the remake... No, what came before this? Was it Remake that came before this?
Yeah, Remake came before it.
We think that they made a unique engine for that one.
I'm on the Wikipedia page for Crystal. It's Crystal something. I don't know. And it's been, to be frank, it's been a long time, and I've only tangentially paid attention to that kind of shit. But, because, like, what engine they're running on, honestly, doesn't make that big of a difference to me.
No,
it doesn't. But, like, they put a ton of fucking work in this, and the project's fucking huge, which...
I'm kind of surprised they didn't do Unreal 5, because Unreal 5 is quite a bit better than Unreal 4. But they might have started developed too far, too long ago for Unreal 5 to be viable.
Yeah.
What they should do is they should do what Satisfactory did and update to Unreal 5 and break the game kind of a lot of ways.
Yeah. Hard pass on that. Oh, shit. That was exciting and disappointing at the same time.
Like, yeah, it was. It's just like... As someone who has a nice computer, I'm not saying I noticed a ton of like amazing graphical improvements. I didn't notice it being exceptionally better, and it just like the game for all intents and purposes just got worse.
Yeah, I've a lot of it. You had to tweak the settings, from what I've read, that like it's really important to get the settings right. But like when you do, like I've watched side by side video of like before and afters and shit like that, and the game looks. The biggest thing is the lighting. The lighting looks a lot better on the new engine. And there's some other minor shit as well. But, like, none of that makes any difference to me. Like, I had to fucking turn all my settings down to play it because it runs so much worse. Like, ugh. I hate when you spend money on a game and they just break it.
And, of course, we're, you know, playing on a server makes all that worse, which isn't their fault necessarily. But, I mean, I would, like, if I played for 2 or 3 hours, I'd have to reset the game sometimes once an hour.
Yeah.
Because it would just, it'd freeze, lock up, crash. It was a colossal clusterfuck.
Yep. So, yeah. So, I'm pretty excited to play Final Fantasy VII. And then a week after that, I'm almost, I don't want to say as excited because, like, it's kind of a different thing. Mm-hmm. But I played another game over the weekend. I played the demo for Unicorn Overlord. And that was fantastic. So, I fully intend on buying that after I beat Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. Mm-hmm. So, got a decent amount of gameplay or like video games content lined up for myself.
So some of the guys on the Discord were talking about Helldivers, and I've kind of been waiting to buy Helldivers until I heard some good news about it from someone a little closer, and that I had someone to play with. Because as I suspected, the game is not that much fun when you're playing with randos. It's fun, but it's not that much fun. So I finally bought that today, and. Sarah was talking about, like, oh, is Matt going to buy it? And I was like, probably not. And it's not because Matt doesn't want to play Helldivers with me, because I guarantee he would. It's because Matt has two new games coming out. That one I knew you were very excited about, and you've been waiting for a long time. And the other one, you know you're going to like, because you love the demo. So Matt's gaming time is going to be at a bit of a premium for the next probably 6 months.
Hopefully it doesn't take that long. I mean, I guess that's kind of a double-edged sword. It'd be nice if I was perfectly content gaming-wise for the next 6 months.
I hope that, like, for whatever reason, this Final Fantasy Rebirth, like, they just make it a time vampire that you love sinking the next 200 hours into.
Yeah,
me too. Because that's all we chase as gamers, is finding a game that you can just enjoy playing for a few hundred hours.
Yeah, let's see. I haven't gone back to PAL World. It doesn't, like... it hasn't hooked me in the same way that like that unicorn game did, which sounds really funny to say, but it's just the truth.
You freaking loser. The unicorn game. I gotta go play my unicorn game.
The funny
game.
Thing is, it really doesn't have anything, at least to start with. Doesn't have, like, the only unicorns that are in the game are, like, apparently the religion in this world has, like, unicorns in it.
And that's the whole reason it's in the... You'd think if it made it to the title screen, it'd be a pretty impactful part of the game.
I'm not saying it isn't, but I haven't encountered anything like that. There's a couple... So there's, like, churches and whatnot, and they have statues of unicorns outside them. That's it.
Are they like, fantasy unicorns or, like, hardcore mask unicorns?
They're straight up, like, horses with a horn.
So they're, like, summer court. Gotcha.
Yeah. Like... And the setting and everything seems really cool. But, yeah, like... And apparently, like, in this particular setting, the religion is very real. Like, you come across an angel who you find these divine shards and you can eventually recruit her. So, like, angels exist. Like, all this stuff actually, the religion is true. You can tell, which I've always been kind of like, okay, then why doesn't everyone go to that? like, if you can prove it. Then I don't think you'd have a whole lot of people, like, denying it. Well, there's magic in the world, and, yeah, these guys, that's an angel.
Yeah. Yeah, as soon as any religion, like, stops being about faith and just shows up on the news, is talking about it, it'd be like, well, that's who I pray to now.
Yeah, apparently, like, you're gonna have a lot of converts, let's say that.
Yeah, it's gonna be like whenever a team wins a Super Bowl. There's a lot of new fans all of a sudden.
Yep. Time to bandwagon on Team Unicorn, I guess. But so yeah, played that, had a good time. Saturday morning I just got up and beat Metal Gear Solid again. Just ran through it. So that was fun.
Saturday, didn't we play cards on Saturday?
Yeah, I got up and it took me about 3.5 hours.
I did beat Dark Souls 3 again, the main game. I'm working through the DLC now.
Nice.
I really like playing this game. The DLC is okay. Ashes of Arendelle are okay. The Ring City's pretty awesome though, and I could do the Ring City before I do Ashes, but you're not supposed. I mean, like, Ashes of Arendelle is the next DLC, I'm pretty sure. I guess.
Did you start a new character?
I did. With moving to the new PC, I lost my save file, which was fine. I just made a new one.
Try anything different or just still carrying giant ass sword?
What do you fucking think?
Well, you never know. I mean, you played it enough that maybe you want to try something else.
No, I hit things with a sword. That's what I do. It was actually kind of rough because there's quite a bit of grinding between where you start and getting to carry a giant sword and wear armor and use it and have it be even remotely effective.
Mm-hmm.
But we finally got there. I finally got to where I could... at least, you know, carry the giant swords and use them. And then I eventually got where I could start to actually have to be able to wear armor with it. And then they finally started getting strong enough that they were doing a respectable amount of damage.
What kind of build do you go with? Just pure strength?
Pure strength. Pure strength, and then I've started dumping stats into dexterity because most of my weapons scale primarily on strength, but they also scale on dexterity. So, you know, you can get to your strength, I take my strength to 40, which is this. I think the soft cap.
Mm-hmm.
The soft cap's either 40 or 50. I think it's 40. And then I spend the rest of the game kind of leveling up, like, carrying capacity, health, and whatnot. And when I feel comfortable with all that, I start dumping it into dexterity for a while just to get more damage out of everything.
Yeah.
And then, eventually, I just start dumping it back into carrying capacity. So, like, on my last playthrough... I was a crazy high level because I just played the game a ton and whatnot. But I eventually got to where I could carry a bow, a large weapon, and then a ultra greatsword. And wear some of the heaviest armor in the game and not be over encumbered.
Nice.
So I would go do, like, battles and invasions and shit. And I wasn't any good, don't get me wrong. But I would just flip-flop between insanely heavy weapon to insanely heavy weapon to a bow. I had this all equipped. Go fuck yourself. It was always funny. And I won some. I lost more than I won, of course, but I had tons of fun, and that's all that mattered.
Mm-hmm.
What am I?
But yeah, as far as I'm going, work was fine. Work's been fine. Played those few games. We played some more pre-modern,
Which
we did record. That was on Saturday as well. You ran a league of Stasis.
I had a lot of fun with Stasis. I actually got to, with some of the changes Matt suggested, we swapped out. The Stasis list has turned a lot more into a combo list than any kind of control list, and I've had a lot of fun playing it. I had several games where you just got lucky and drew the nuts, and like the, I'm not sure that it wasn't a game, but it was close.
There were a couple that literally just weren't games.
Mm-hmm.
Like the decks I was playing had no chance of interacting when you turn one Stasis, turn two Root Maze,
or
turn
so
two
quickly
Chill, turn three Chill. Stuff
there
like that.
There was just nothing to be done on, Burn's End, or like even the Control Mirror we played. Like I got I got horrendously lucky that I was able to go turn one. I milled a five, turn one Black Vice, and Matt just didn't draw a playable, and just died to having like three Swords to Plowshares and two counterspells in his hand that I never had to play into.
And two standstills.
Yes,
which if I cast, I just lose.
Yeah, you cannot get behind a standstill at all.
Yeah.
So talking about pre-modern a little bit, we can go through one of our leagues today. We're going to try and start catching up on those leagues and getting them out to people because we're having a lot of fun doing them. And there's some interesting thoughts in there. I watched a YouTube video of a guy, and he wasn't a deck expert by any means, but playing this new, like, fabled red-green Terravor deck.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it definitely seems really strong. I don't know if it feels like crazy, but have you seen any games of it? Have you seen it before?
Oh, I've watched a ton of games of it. Yeah.
So it seems to have like a ton of really powerful openers that just kind of like Stasis can just like lock the game down before it becomes a game. Although I would say that Red Green Terravor probably has more than I do between like the several land destruction spells it can ramping into Sphere of Resistance. Like, all those things can really lock a game down really quickly. Like, it makes me, if it stays the de facto best deck, or even just one of the most more played decks, I'm probably going to throw some annuls in my sideboard.
Oh, yeah, you for sure should. And
because the only thing in that deck I think, legitimately scared of is a fast Sphere of Resistance. Or even a Sphere of Resistance at any point, like, that is a very big beating on the deck. So I will want to have a nice cheap answer for that.
Yeah, the people have been throwing around the best deck in the format thing for the past few weeks about it. Because so the guy I watch on YouTube, he's not the first person to ever play it, but he tweaked it and has really popularized it. Mm-hmm. And like I've watched him play everything he's uploaded with it. Like I keep track of it. Like It's basically the de facto way to play Terravor Oath now. People still, mm-hmm. in my opinion, it's probably, at least should, in the long run, replace Mono Green. Because it does basically everything Mono Green does. It tweaks a little bit of stuff, but they're very similar decks.
So remind me, because I've only seen one league with it, what does the red buy you?
The red primarily gets you Pyroclasm. And maybe an Earthquake.
Okay.
Which, Pyroclasm, for anybody who doesn't know, is 2-mana sorcery, deal 2 damage to each creature.
Mm-hmm.
Earthquake is a red and X, and it deals X damage to each creature without flying and each player. And then basically Red Blast. That's pretty much what they're sideboarding for. Now, a couple of the innovations that Fran put in there, he is hard on 4 Sylvan Libraries.
Mm-hmm.
The Sphere of Resistances, he's also hard on the 7 or 8 Stone Rains, Stone Rains.
Does he have a relatively thick accent?
Yes.
That's who, okay, so that makes sense. That's probably who, you probably recommended me watch him. That's who I watch. I watched him play a league with it. So maybe he was more of an expert. I didn't necessarily see him misplay a bunch. I'm pretty sure I watched him talk when he started playing. He gave some disclaimers about his skill with the deck, but I also might have just stumbled across an older video of him playing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
The first one he released, he fucking, he won, he went like 8-0.
It wasn't that one.
That was, it was from January where he,
Well, did he recently play against Sly game 1?
I think so, yeah.
So I watched a recent one then. Maybe I just misunderstood him when he was talking about it, or maybe I made that up. Because I remember it was funny. We were talking about some of the mild controversy right now on the pre-modern Discord with, what's his name? What's the gentleman's name?
Mike Flores, yeah.
Mike Flores, and how he has some opinions about the matchup with Sly and Red Green Terrivore, and like just the Discord's going crazy with bickering and bitching back and forth. And although to Mike Flores's credit, I don't think I saw any responses on his end. He basically came in and made a statement of his opinion, and then for the next 2 days, the Discord like crapped all over him.
Right, which was totally unwarranted. Because everyone was acting like he just got on there and just called everyone fucking idiots and was being really offensive or whatever. Turns out, apparently, almost everybody on that Discord that was in that reply chain has really thin skin.
Yeah, they got... Matt showed me some pretty salty responses.
Yeah, it was kind of like... Which were seemed totally disproportionate, right? Like, after you read what he wrote and then read what people fucking replied with, and it's like, did we read the same thing?
Uh-huh.
Like...
Yeah, it was kind of surprising. Mike Flores is one of the most competent voices you're going to hear in Magic. And
in particular, pre-modern.
Especially like, pre-modern.
He's for sure the biggest name in pre-modern.
So, like it's the comparison. If he came into our Discord and said anything about anything, I'm not saying I would agree with him right away, but I would give what he says, like, a lot of thought and, like... digging into, because if he's saying it, there's something there.
It has merit.
If he came, I mean, that'd be like if LSV joined our Discord and was like, hey, you know, I think Blue Red Delver is criminally overplayed and the deck isn't as good as everybody thinks it is. Like, I probably disagree with that at face value, but I'm not going to respond immediately. You're a fucking idiot. You know what you're talking about. Stop spreading these stupid opinions.
Right.
Like, if LSV is going to take the time to say it, There's something there, guys. There's something underneath everything.
Yeah, it was the whole thing's just silly. Now, two things to add to that. The Spike Colony released a quick little 30-minute small tournament wrap-up. They had a over in their local scene. I don't remember how far they drove, but they've got like a decent number of people. He lives in New York, so obviously there's way more people than there are in, you know, our area.
Oh, yeah.
So they've got a decent little pre-modern scene there. I think he said they had 30 people show up to one of their... They had a tournament in, like, a bar. So just to hang out and play.
Oh, awesome.
Kind of thing. Great. And Red Green Oath won.
Yeah.
The guy he hosts the podcast with... Actually, they may be reversed, but since it's Mike Flores, he's first chair to me.
Yeah.
His co-host, Lanny, he got second with Groatog, and then Mike Flores played Blue-White Dreadnought and got fourth. It was funny, though, because he sideboarded like a maniac against Red-Green Oath and then just didn't play it.
That's awesome.
So the sideboard tech, at least currently for Red-Green Oath, is Sabo's Web, which, as a Stasis player, you don't really give a shit about this particular card. But what it is it's two mana, it ETBs, you draw a card, and then lands with activated abilities that don't produce mana, don't untap.
Oh. Okay, so you can't rely on your man lands.
Yes, or your Rashadan Ports, or your Wastelands. Like,
oh, so is it any land that has an activated ability?
Any land that has an activated ability that doesn't produce mana.
Wow.
So, like, that's good. You know, Wasteland can tap for a colorless, that produces mana, you're good, but it also can tap to do something else.
If it has any other text, it doesn't untap.
Yes. Rough. So the nice thing about it is it's basically within the format impossible to trade with at parity. So like, because it draws you a card. So like, even if they just naturalize it, you're still ahead on a card.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't naturalize it, it's just like a one-sided Armageddon.
Uh-huh.
So, now in Stasis, you don't really give a shit about that, because you play Stasis, you play One-Sided Armageddon anyways.
Yeah.
Like, main deck.
The only land I have that isn't a basic island doesn't untap anyway.
Right. So, that, I think, Anul would probably be a decent card for your sideboard. I don't think you'd really need Sabo's Webs, but he was packing four of them, and didn't end up playing him. And then I guess Lanny beat Mike Flores to get into the, maybe that's wrong. Did he? I don't remember. It was a quick podcast and I was making breakfast. I don't remember who beat
I would but very anywho. Much like to get that deck proxied up just because, like, with it being the new boogeyman of the format, kind of, I really want to play against it. I don't know if I feel like the matchup's that bad for me. I mean, I'm playing a tier 2 deck, so, like, I'm not...
According to Lanny, you are playing a tier 3 or lower. He released his new tier list, and Stasis was, this deck is no longer part of the format.
Oh, wow, that sucks.
I personally disagree. I think, now, you're playing with that build that we've got for your Stasis list. When you ran that league, you 4-1 me. Mm-hmm. There's a few things you got, admittedly, some good variants on your side, yes. Some bad on my side.
Yep.
But, and I'm playing, you know, there's a lot of stuff going against me. I'm playing 5 different decks that I've never played for. You know what yep. I mean?
Oh, yeah.
But, like, the deck, the current Stasis build that I think we have built for you, I don't think that is a non-playable deck. Like, it yeah. does some very powerful stuff. It honestly, so this is, I was getting a little salty at the end. And it wasn't because I was losing. I was just legitimately not having fun. And mm-hmm. You want to know why? It felt like playing against Legacy Show and Tell.
I was thinking about it later.
It's just a 1-2, like uh-huh. on anything yeah. after turn 2 and potentially even turn 1, I just can never tap my lands.
And it's just, and like, you're right. It's like, that's not fun to do horribly over and over and over.
I was yeah. like, God damn. Now, the funny thing is, this is not our first league, and the initial build and everything before Root Maze, I didn't mind playing against, mm-hmm. because, like, not because it was less powerful or I was winning more often, but because, like, you'd do your thing, and I would have counterplay.
Yes.
And this is just like, well, at some point I have to tap lands for mana, and then if you're playing well, I just get got, and the game's over. Like, mm-hmm. if you play well and draw the right cards, I can't win.
Yep, there's a very narrow window.
And that was, so like, now, yeah.
What's funny is, I was thinking about it later that day and the changes we made, and I was enjoying it, but I was like, this feels a lot like playing Reanimator, which I don't play Show and Tell, I used to play Reanimator, but just like, sometimes the deck just wins the game on like turn 2. And like I said, we had good variants that day. So it wasn't sometimes, it was several times. But like, that's also not fun. Like, people don't like playing against Reanimator because it's not fun to be like, hey, it's turn 2 Grizzlebrand again. Can you answer it? No? Cool, game's over. Or can you answer it twice?
The other thing that's like, Grizzlebrand and like Show and Tell and Reanimator and whatnot in Legacy, you have ways to fight back against that.
Yes.
Whereas in pre-modern, like, if you don't have blue, obviously you don't have any counter spells.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, there's very little deck manipulation or anything. And there's the only deck that, in my opinion, is even remotely as fast. Well, I guess there's technically two, but I don't play Reanimator enough to know whether or not it's real or not. But my mm-hmm. Reanimator deck that I built is very yeah. fast. And the other one is basically Dreadnought, making a 12-12. Yep. And even with the 12-12 game, like, you make it, and like, them making the 12-12 puts you on a clock, but it doesn't actively disrupt your ability to finish, to like, no. defend yourself. Not that I'm saying Stasis is as good as 12-12, because it's not.
Mm-mm.
But like, it attacks on an axis that is really hard to fucking play against.
Yeah. Well, the nice thing about it is, like, I get to, like, you can do your thing, and I get to counter your thing by just enacting my game plan.
Right.
Which I don't have to take time off of what I'm trying to do to deal with your 12-12 a lot of times. I mean, don't get me wrong, the window is narrow, but like, if we open a hand up and I open my hand up and I have Stasis and Protection and you go, you know, turn 1 Dreadnought, and I go, well, fuck. You know, and then I get hit by it once and then I go, cool, Stasis? And like, that Dreadnought is now, for all intents and purposes, removed. I have to deal with the next Dreadnought, but I have secured what I want out of this game and stopped you from winning the game immediately without...
And really impeded the next Dreadnought, because, like, yes, presumably they've tapped out.
Yeah, and you need to find your lands to cash your next Dreadnought, and that is a very low land count deck, so it's going to be a little harder to find those lands, period. Oops. And then... every time you go for Dreadnought, you're just opening yourself up for an immediate 2-for-1.
Mm-hmm.
Which also is great. Although, in fairness, I did think about, there's a line I actually heard on a YouTube show or a YouTube video where it's like, getting one Dreadnought caught under stasis, you can just play the second Dreadnought and sacrifice the first Dreadnought. And I didn't think about that, but still.
Well, I did a similar thing on one of our leagues where I pumped up a Psychotog big enough that, yes, I could play my... You had my Psychotog locked down, but I got him big enough that I played, uh-huh, my fucking Dreadnought and sacrificed it.
I think you won that game, too.
Yeah, I think so.
I think I lost because, yeah, like, I just couldn't... I could not deal with... I had one turn, I think, to deal with the Dreadnought, and I couldn't do it. Yeah. And that's all it took. But yeah, I would love to play Stasis a couple games against this new Boogeyman just to see, because I don't think the matchup is that bad, except Sphere of Resistance will be a bit of a beating, possibly. And yeah, the ability to power out one or two spheres very quickly.
Yeah, Sphere of Resistance really makes it hard for you to protect your combo.
Yeah.
When you can't use... if you're under a stasis and, you don't have any lands untapped, Thwart all of a sudden really fucking sucks.
Yeah.
So does Foil. it's just like, oh, I just can't cast these.
Mm-hmm. It's awful.
But the flip side is, you actively, again, if you can go, if I was going to build that, realistically, I would probably go up to 4 root mazes. You probably should just have 4 root mazes in there. Because, the Black Vice doesn't matter. And I've been thinking about this the whole weekend. We just bumped up to a 3rd Black Vice.
You think we should stay at 2 Black Vice and go to 3 root or 4 root maze?
Yeah, because the second root maze is redundant, but the fact of the matter is, you can turn, you just win the root maze in stasis is what wins you the game.
That's
like Black
true.
Vice doesn't win you the game; it kills your opponent, but it doesn't win you the game.
Mm-hmm.
And assuming now, obviously there are niche scenarios where you don't draw one for a really long time, but adding another one does reduce the numbers of that.
Yep.
And as we've discussed with Forsaken City, a lot of times the redundant cards, with Elvish Spirit Guide, they just get pitched to fucking, mm-hmm, Forsaken City anyways. So it's like, yeah, yep, I've got a root maze in my hand, but I almost have to have a Forsaken City for this to happen. And all that means is I just pitch the fucking root maze, the second root maze to Forsaken City.
Yeah, exactly.
So who cares? So I think if you're going to make that deck, because I think the thing you want to do with a deck like that is make the ceiling as high as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what we've done in each iteration, is just make the ceiling higher and higher and higher. We've also kind of by default increased the floor a little bit too.
Yeah.
Fundamentally, the floor got shifted up by, if the combo happens, you can't just draw out of it.
Yeah.
That was a huge increase to the floor. But adding Root Maze and then Elvish Spirit Guide, in my opinion, just jacked the ceiling through the roof.
Oh,
where,
yeah,
every now and then you just win on turn 2 or 3.
Yep.
And, I would want to maximize that. And, Root Maze isn't even bad. You can just, turn 1 Root Maze for you just isn't even a bad fucking play.
It's not as bad, for sure. There's been a couple games where I have just run a Root Maze out in the middle of the game. It slows my opponent down a little bit. It doesn't affect me too much. I can play through it, and it saves me a mana later having to pay for the root maze with the stasis. I don't have to have all that mana available.
And it puts the onus on your opponent to go, if you ever tap out and I just wind slam a fucking, mm-hmm, stasis, the game's just done.
Yeah, the game is over, which is that's what I like about the new iteration, is I get to look at my opponent and go, we're done playing Magic, you've lost.
Right, you no longer cast spells.
It might be on paper, take me another 22 turns to kill you, because I gotta draw the second Forsaken City and draw the Black Vice to go with it, but you're dead, I almost promise.
Yeah, and so I don't know, it really feels like that's what you want to be doing. The Black Vice is just what kills your opponent.
Mm-hmm.
So
we can do it.
Maybe there's a fucking another card to cut other than Black Vice. I don't know, but
I don't know.
After it's getting real. You're getting real thin on counter spells and shit.
I've been happy to trim the counter spells down pretty low. Now we're down to 4 days. I think we have 4 days, 3 counter spell. Or actually, I think it's 3 days, 3 counter spell, and then 4 pitch counter spells.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel good. I felt good about all those transitions, cutting down to lower numbers of counter spells, because most of the time I only need to counter one or two spells, and that numbers felt pretty good. But we're definitely getting to the territory, like, I don't want to just keep cutting them, because...
Yeah, you have to...
We're starting to get into games where it's like, I really need to find a counter spell. I really need to find a counter spell. I really need to find a counter spell. And every time we cut one out, it just gets a little bit harder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I could be wrong. Maybe, you know what I mean? Like, maybe you don't want the fourth root maze, but mm-hmm. like, just, I mean, we played one league, whatever.
That's Matt's long-term strategy is just to, he's realized how strong the deck can be, and he's going to start giving me bad advice to try and tune it back down so it's less unfun to play against.
Yeah, you should just cut the root mazes and just swap the Arcane Denials back in.
Yeah, it's just all these suboptimal stuff. No, I that's absolutely, I don't, I mean, you could probably go down to like two Dazes and one Black Vice, really, Jake.
Right.
Is Daze even good? Like, you don't, what, it's four spike, you're going to be four spiking people?
Yeah, four spike sucks, come on. So yeah, got that. I think we've got it. We're within one or two cards on the main. The sideboard's gonna just shift over time. Mm-hmm. As far as red green goes, it's only a few cards. Like the red green was a pivot off of the mono green list.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a couple different Terravor Oath lists that run around. Mm-hmm. There's green. There was green-white, which green-white didn't run all the Stone Rains. It maybe ran a couple, but it primarily leaned on Cataclysm and whatnot.
Gotcha.
And, like, Exalted Angel. So you'd have Terravor and Exalted Angel with Oath of the Druids, Cataclysm to, like, secure the game,
mm-hmm.
Swords to Plowshares in there, varying numbers of, like, Mox Diamond, Sphere of Resistances, Sylvan Libraries, stuff like that. The green one was, like, hard on the... We're running, like, effectively eight Stone Rains, which you've yep. played the green one before.
It
basically, you just... You take that list, you tweak it a little bit, and splash some green... Or splash some red for Pyroclasm, and that's the list. So I can very easily get that list transferred over.
So just because it's the boogeyman, like, I just want to play against... If everyone is just stroking off to this deck, I really want to play against it.
Yeah, and I had planned on it. I just haven't gotten around to it yet.
You've been too busy staring at the countdown timer for Final Fantasy VII?
No, I was busy tweaking your deck, tweaking my deck. I got all those. I got my first order from Card Kingdom in, so I've got a bunch. I got like $700 worth of cards in on Monday.
Did you get your survivals?
Not yet. Card Kingdom just doesn't have any in stock. And they haven't since I... the funny thing is, for the several weeks up before I shipped my order, they had some. They had two, in fact, which is all I technically need. I'm going to get a third so I don't have to play my foil. But like...
Yep. And then you're ready, now they can't keep them in stock.
Yeah. So I check throughout the day. I check my email. I check Card Kingdom directly just to see, because like at some point they need to have them in stock, and I need to pull the trigger. So because I've got like $1,500 worth of store credit on there.
Mm-hmm.
And
you want to go ahead and buy me a stasis list real quick?
Nope. Dude, I mean, if you want to give me cash, sure. Like if Matt, you want to buy my store credit, that'd be fine.
Matt over here won't even sell me his copy of stasis. I have to go buy it off the internet.
The funny thing is, like, I would sell it to you, but all the cards I just want for other decks anyways. Because, like, I don't even have the stasises. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But, like, Chain of Vapor sees a ton of play. Ugh. Day sees a ton of play. Foil sees a ton of play. Thwart doesn't see a ton of play, but, like, still sees play outside of stasis. Like,
so glad that Chain of Vapors are $12 a piece.
Right? Ugh. That's why I don't want to fucking buy anymore.
Fucking CEDH fucked us over on that one.
Yeah. So, like, there's not really anything that would... help you, if that makes sense. Like, mm-hmm. it would save you a few bucks in shipping, but I lose a bunch of staples that I don't really want to get rid of.
Yeah.
So, and like, I don't have Forsaken Cities. Like, you'd be buying like some cheap blue counter spells and Black Vice.
Yeah, but you don't have the counter spells I want. I'm gonna get the I don't know how to describe it. Oh, it's the Mercadian Masks one. I was looking at them, which ones I wanted. And I think I decided I won the Marcadian Mask one, which is a very common old border.
Yeah. It's the one I use in most of my decks.
That are in there?
It might not be in there, but like, I've got like 8 or 12 or somewhere around the copies floating around. Like, it's the one with the merfolk looking chick with the thing dissolving in her hands. Yeah, that's my favorite art of Counterspell as well in the old border. Mm-hmm. So that's the one I use. I just have a ton of, A, I have a ton of Counterspells, and B, I have a ton of Counterspells floating around in decks. So I eventually, after the first couple decks, ran out of those and started adding in the others. So I also like the Tempest ones that have the guy in red that's like wigging out.
Is that a white border one?
It's still black bordered. The white border ones I have that you've seen that I have the dude in the center, like floating and meditating.
Yeah. Those are okay, but I don't, they're white border and I don't want to fuck with. So I'm already black bordering a bunch of cards, and I could obviously black border those too, but I don't want to fuck with it more than I have to. Like, I didn't see any of the Counterspell arts that struck me so awesome that I'd be willing to fuss with black bordering them.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my god, so I'm sure there's tons of, like, actual card alterists that do it right, but, like, I just, for funsies, like, Googled, like, how to black border cards and read some Reddit posts, and everyone was like, the entire Magic community is just on board with this. Oh, just use a Sharpie. Just put a Sharpie on. I read so many posts where it's like, oh, I just used a wide black Sharpie to do it, and it was fine. It looks like it looks bad in a certain light, but it's fine. And it's like, so I tried that. It looks like ass.
Yeah, I assumed just it would.
Putting a Sharpie marker to your white borders, it looks awful. So I had my wife, thankfully, she's awesome. She was able to pretty quickly color match it off of a black on Amazon. We busted out the airbrush, and they look phenomenal. I haven't done all of my cards yet because I haven't even gotten them in because somebody baited me along that they might sell me their cards, so I didn't order mine for an extra 3 weeks. So once they come in, I'll be able to blackboard the rest of them, and I'm looking forward to having a really nice-looking Stasis deck.
Yep. Well, it's a good thing that there's literally no pressure for you to actually own a physical copy of
Stasis. I know. That is the nice thing about it is, like, we do just own Stasis between us, and I could play it in any tournament we wanted to. But I want to have my own Stasis list so I can sit at home and look at it and play test it and have it.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I plan on probably, I would like to have a version of Dreadnought, Goblins, Burn, Elves, Oath of the Druids.
The big ones. Well, the Elves is yours, and then the big ones.
Yeah, like, I want to be able to field something in that realm for each of those. Which, mm-hmm. basically, I mean, it's not like one-to-one here, but if you look at what those things run other than the two tribal decks, it's, I need Dreadnoughts, Survival of the Fittest, or Mox Diamonds.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those are the big cards in those three decks. Everything else is relatively inexpensive. Obviously, there's some cards, like Rashad and Port's not a cheap card, but Mox Diamond is $600 or $700.
So it's kind of funny. After the success we had with Elvish Spirit Guide and watching the Mox Diamond success with powering out these really powerful 2-mana spells like Sylvan Library and Sphere of Resistance from the Red-Green Terravore deck, I was like, I kind of want to experiment with putting Mox Diamond in Stasis, and that might be something I'm kind of interested in. And then I thought about it, and I was like, nope, I'm not. Even if it's objectively better, I'm not buying Mox Diamonds.
Right. And
so if I'm not going to buy Mox Diamonds, there's no fucking point in even playtesting it.
Yeah. Honestly, I don't even think they'd be better. Because, like, I think if you were going to do Mox Diamond, just use Lotus Petal. Like, if you want it. Because, like, your goal is
good.
They don't untap. Makes sense. Now, obviously, there's scenarios where it accelerates you into other things and they untap. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Mox Diamond comes in untapped. Through a actually, I don't even think it does. Nope. I think Root Maze hits artifacts. Maze.
The other reason, like, I wasn't in love with it is, like, you know, it doesn't pair well with Root Maze. Like, there was more reasons, but yeah, the but primary
fundamentally
reason
is,
like, I'm not willing to buy them, and so if I'm not willing to buy them, I don't want to. I honestly don't want to play the deck and find out it's way better with Mox Diamond because, like, then I need to buy Mox Diamonds and I don't fucking want to.
Yeah, realistically, I don't think it would be. It also allows you to get blown out, too. So if, like, somebody answers your Mox Diamond and you're relying on that, like, it's a lot easier, as we've discussed, to blow up a Mox Diamond than it is just an island.
Yeah, 100%.
And the nice thing about Elvish Spirit Guide is it gets you the green that you need, but it's incredibly difficult. I don't even think you can interact with it. I don't remember if it counts as an activated ability that uses a stack or if it's a mana source. I don't really care.
I don't know.
It doesn't really matter. I mean, it matters in the like literal sense of somebody could stifle it or not, but in any realistic sense, it doesn't matter.
It's so very, like, very minor.
It's next to impossible to interact with. So, like, it does exactly what you want it to do. It dodges your... It produces mana under a stasis lock.
Mm-hmm.
So you can still cast your Black Vice. You can have Root Maze and Stasis out and still cast your Black Vice with it. Like, I just don't see it as actually better than Mox Time. It may be, like, if people tested it. Because, like, that is the one thing. Is, like, there's not 100,000 people out there testing pre-modern stasis.
Yep. It's very possible that... It is better. It is stronger. And some people have figured it out, but they don't play in the big tournaments. They don't play enough. Or they got unlucky to variants like that. That's the thing that can happen so much with like pre-modern is, you know, you and I could come up with a new amazing innovation to stasis. It's objectively a way more powerful deck. You know, we play 10 or 15 matches. We get unlucky a handful of times. And it's like, it doesn't feel any different.
Yeah, because you just never draw the card or it doesn't pan out.
You know, you play 150 matches and the numbers would bear out that it's just a bet. I mean, case in point, we put two Elvish Spirit Guides in there. I think I drew it over the course of a league once or twice. I just barely saw them. Now, I think once I drew it and never used it or maybe discarded it to a foil, and then once I drew it and was able to slam a stasis on like turn two with a Root Maze and lock the game down. But it could have very easily happened where I saw it once the whole day. And that it's hard to really evaluate whether or not that change is good when you play 5-10 matches, you don't see any of your two ofs. Was it even worth putting in there? I don't fucking know.
So I'm looking at this other stasis build. So there was a tournament, had 66 people. It was 9 days ago. And it's got at least Lanny from Spike Colony playing in it. So, like, it has some people, right?
Yeah.
Stasis top 8. It's just in here. Nice. It's in the bottom 4. It didn't make top 4. It doesn't.
That's awesome, though. I mean,
This list is fucking wacky. So, it's much different than ours.
Uh-huh.
It's got one plane, so it's got white, 4 Swords to Plowshares. It's also running a Treva's Ruin, which is the green, white, blue bounce land. So, you have to bounce a non-layer when it comes into play or sacrifice it. So that's how you're getting your extra mana there, which we just replaced with fucking Elvish Spirit Guide.
Yep.
1 days, 1 foil, 2 Gaia's Blessing. Do you know what Gaia's Blessing does?
That shuffles your deck, or shuffles your graveyard.
Right. So you can shuffle cards back in, and if it's milled, it shuffles your whole thing, and it also draws a card.
So that's probably some Oath Protection, so you don't just you can't lose to Oath, never mind.
Realistically, it's like Brain Freeze Protection, so... Or preventing yourself from being milled out, or like if the game goes long, you just, you know, can keep shuffling shit back in.
Uh-huh.
Which has come up a couple times. I think I actually decked you once.
Yes.
Not last week, but that was before Root Maze.
It's happened where, it was with Root Maze because I had gotten you locked out.
Oh, but yeah.
I didn't get the 7 cards in my, I brought the creature in and taken the Black Vices out. And I didn't have the 7 cards in my graveyard to turn Threshold on. But it's happened. I've decked before. We've come down. It happened again when you were playing Stifle Knot, where like I was able to answer. Oh, it wasn't Stasis. It wasn't Stasis, though. Sorry. Nope, it wasn't Stasis.
But Landstill, wasn't it?
It was Landstill. But like decking is a real consideration in this format with that deck, with these blue-white control decks.
Especially, I mean, one of the biggest reasons is just 4 Gushes, really, between... So this deck runs 4 Gushes. It has Impulse instead of Sleight of Hand, which I don't agree with.
Mm-hmm.
Although there may be merit to Impulse now that you're kind of more of a combo, like
I was thinking about
even
that
heavier,
too.
But we've also discussed it. 2 mana in that deck is really hard, and it also doesn't help you hit your land drops early in the same way. So I don't know. Sleight of Hand seems to be fucking working.
I'm happy with it right now. I'm not looking to change the cantrip suite.
Yeah, 3 swords, 1 mana short, 2 thwarts, 4 black vice, 1 claws of Gix, which is a 0 mana artifact that you can tap, pay 1, sacrifice a permanent, and gain 1 life. So that's basically shutting your I would assume that's there to turn off your stasis when you don't want it. So end of your turn, I'm going to sacrifice stasis, untap, and do something.
And then play my second stasis I've drawn.
Correct. And then two Urza's Bauble. Like,
why?
What do you? I don't know.
What's the synergy with it? Getting some, like, turn one or turn two information?
To me, something like Urza's Bauble in this deck screams, I don't know what should go in that slot.
Yeah.
It's
a non-card, basically.
Like, I'd rather just have two Sleight of Hands. Sleight of Hand's a way better card than Urza's Bauble uh-huh. in this deck. Like,
yep.
Or fucking peak.
No kidding. I rarely resolve a Sleight of Hand and then feel bad about having cast it. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, well, there's only two options, right? So both cards are a whiff, and you got one card out of the way, and it replaced itself. Yep. One card's a fucking banger, and the other one sucks.
Yep.
So, like, you keep the banger, and you bottom the one that sucks. So now you got a good card, and you got rid of a bad card.
Uh-huh.
They're both good. That can kind of suck, but, like, that's, A, pretty rare. And
it's also a problem I'm really happy to have. Like,
right. Like, oh, shucks, I got to draw the best card in my deck a turn sooner.
Yep. Well, it's like just like the complaint of like, man, both these cards are so good, and I only get to take one really good card. Darn it.
Right. So.
And yeah, like you could always say like, well, you know, if you didn't cast it, then you you would have drawn both really good cards. And it's like, yeah, or I would have drawn two lands. And the odds that I draw two lands is way fucking higher than I draw two good cards in a row.
Or you're dead before you get to draw the second one.
Yeah, also very real. And like it kind of felt like a little bit of Legacy. We had a couple games there. I think I even lost the one right. Like I got to go like gush into sleight of hand portent.
Yep.
Like in one turn, I looked at like nine cards or eight cards or whatever. It was insane.
Yeah, I've always known gush. Not I shouldn't say always, but like since I've been competitively playing Magic, I've realized gush's strength. Right. Mm-hmm. The primary way I've played Gush was in Pauper. It's banned in Legacy. It's restricted in Vintage. I don't even play Vintage, so it doesn't matter. But, like, seeing Gush in action... Because funny thing is, I hardly ever play blue decks, and that's continued straight into pre-modern.
Like, yeah, I know.
When I roll them in there, I'm like, okay, I'm playing land still. Let's do this.
But it like, looks like you get... I mean, it always looks like you're a little frustrated when you get to... Like, you've drawn dead for three turns, and you could just watch me be like, just cantrip, cantrip, cantrip. Oh, hey, look. There it is.
Because it turns out Gush is a really fucking strong card.
It's crazy good.
And in no way am I even saying the ban discussion. That's not even happening. Like, I would ban 20 other cards before I banned Gush, just mm-hmm. because, like, I want to play Gush. Like,
oh, yeah.
It's a really interesting card. Now, it's less, in my opinion, it's a little less interesting in a format without dual lands targeting your wastelands. Like, you don't have that tension there, which is really interesting.
You can't catch a Thermokarst.
You can. Like, you can get some stuff. And that's the thing, is like, that's one of the counterplays to that red-green deck.
Yep.
Is, like, you've got eight Stone Rains, and a lot of times they run up against decks with Daze and Gush. And it's like, your Thermokarst seems pretty fucking bad when I counter it with a Daze.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Like, just by casting Daze.
Yeah. Like, you've got six lands. You tap three to cast Thermokarst, and I go, cool, Daze.
Right.
Countered. Doesn't matter, bud.
Yep. Same thing with Gush. Yeah, I'm going to counter your Thermokarst by drawing two cards.
Rough.
Feels and bad. In your case, untapping two lands.
Yeah, keeping the lock going.
Or turning a fucking foil on. Like, Gush into foil is bonkers.
Yeah. I do, which, like...
Which, to be fair, is what got it banned out of fucking Pop.
By the way. I don't know if it's the overall power level or what, but, like, Gush doesn't feel oppressive. Like, setting yourself back two land drops does feel like a very distinct cost.
In a lot of matchups, it does.
It's, like, it's significant.
There's some very aggressive decks that they're not excited when you cast Gush, but they're like, okay.
Uh-huh.
Like, if they're forcing you to Gush early, where it's just like you're setting yourself back a ton of fucking tempo by, like, bouncing two lands, like, that's a pretty big... That's a lot of mana over the course of a game, if you think about it.
It is. Oh, yeah. So you gush once or twice. Like, you get access to cards, and it's very valuable. Like, I don't, it doesn't hurt me too much in Stasis, because the whole point of the deck is to have, I can, you know, do my thing with two or three lands out. But there's lots of times I feel it where it's like, man, if I gush here, I'm going down to one or two lands, and the outs I'm kind of running down are going to cost 2, 3, 4 mana, unless I get really lucky.
Yep. And every now and then, gush just fucking whiffs. Oh, and yeah. Like, now, again, we just discussed that. You're just taking two bad cards off the top, so you dig a little deeper sooner. Uh-huh. But, like, it sucks dick when you gush trying to find an answer, and you rip two more islands, and then you discard the hand size.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You're just like, oh, shit.
It happened a few times in the league I was playing with Matt, where, like, I ended up, like, I gushed once or twice, just stuff, and his spell would resolve, because I've got 7 lands in my hand.
Yep.
Like, I gushed, picked up 2 lands, drew 2 lands, and then gushed again and maybe found a spell or whatever. Like, I have a nothing in my hand except for lands.
Yep. So, anywho, that's I mainly brought up that deck, that person's build, just to show you, like, there's a ton of different fucking Stasis builds. And I think that's one of the reasons that contributes to it feeling weaker, as I don't think a ton of people are on Stasis, and so there's just a ton of different, there's no, in my opinion, there doesn't seem to be any consensus on a good Stasis, on the best Stasis list, and like that by default makes a deck weaker.
Yeah. Every time I see Stasis played on the Cloud Goat Ranger, no matter who's playing it, it is always a wildly different list. It is not, you know, a couple flex slots or 3 or 4 fun ofs, or it is, other than having like Stasis and Black Vice, a lot of the decks don't even look like each other.
Right. Which to me, I think is silly. Like, I had a feeling, because my friend Mike back in middle school and high school, Stasis was his deck. So I've been playing against a ton of different variations of Stasis, mm-hmm. right? Like, when he first put it together, it used Instill Energy and Birds of Paradise, which is just, it's a 1-mana aura that lets you untap a creature. That's how he was paying for Stasis.
Nice.
But like, I've played against Root Maze Stasis before. Like, I'm like, I feel like that's probably still where you want to be. And then like, we added it, and it, to me, in my opinion, is it's night and day.
Yes, I would agree.
And then I see these lists that don't have Root Maze, and I'm just like,
yep,
like,
feels wrong.
It feels really wrong to not have Root Maze.
Yeah, you have, well, you talk about like, it's an A-B combo that ends the game, and you're already running A, like. Right. Might as well
and,
run B,
and B
guys.
B supports your game plan independently of whether or not you actively have A. It's not like you're just dead with Emrakul in your hand the whole game, mm-hmm. right? You cast fucking Root Maze, and it slows the game down.
Yeah.
it buys you time to play your fucking Stasis.
Yeah, I don't. And after playing, like, after we just, you know, we took the deck that did really well at a large European tournament. It was like Eternal Weekend or whatever.
It was the pre-modern side event. We had like 130 fucking or 160 people in it.
So like, we took that up deck and immediately shredded a lot of it to make room for Root Maze, and it wasn't that hard. There's plenty, if you're not running Root Maze, I almost promise there's room in there for it. You should run between 2 and 3, maybe 4.
Well, this motherfucker's running 1 Claw of Gex and 2 Urza's Baubles. That sounds an awful lot like 3 Root Mazes to me.
Yep, that's pretty. Because, like, the option for no mana, bounce your, or remove your Stasis and untap is pretty great. Like, that's really powerful. But you know what I'm never worried about doing when I have Stasis and Root Maze? Is removing my Stasis, because the game's over.
Right.
I don't really care about it. I don't need to, like, there have been times where, like, I'll chain a Vapor, the Stasis back, just to get to untap my 9 lands or whatever. But, like, I only do that so that I can cantrip and hopefully find the Black Vice and just end the game sooner.
Right, or that's what it is. It's like, I'm going to leave you tapped. I'm going to bounce this at the end of your turn. I'm going to spend a turn looking for a way to close the game out, mm-hmm. and I'm going to replay it. Or, you know, you go, okay, I drew the wrong sequence of cards, and now I don't have a way to pay for Stasis, so I'm going to bounce it and then keep going, right?
Yep.
And that's fine. Or you can do multiple things. You go, I'm going to bounce your fucking Terravor. I'm going to bounce my Stasis and your Terravor.
Yeah.
And
that feels good.
Yeah, like that kind of stuff. But like, I don't think, like, there's no, I don't think I'm missing anything. because like looking at this list, it's pretty straightforward. There's nothing you would want to sacrifice other than stasis. Mm-hmm. Because like the only thing you get out of it's one life. So who fucking cares, right?
Yeah. The sacrifice is the reward, not the life.
Correct. So there's nothing else on here, and it's just like you could replace those three cards with cards that just win you the game.
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't agree with the deck building. Now, do whatever you want, but it's like to me that so saying like, "Hey, should I run Root Maze in my stasis deck?" That is a comparable thing when like when we're in Legacy and it's like, hey, I have red mana. Should I run Ragavan? It's like, if you have red mana, you should run Ragavan. And I think if you have stasis, you should run Root Maze.
Right. But like, and there's, so because everyone's going to say it, there are reasons to not run Ragavan if you're running red, but you need to have a reason not mm-hmm. to.
Yeah.
So like, for example, the red prison decks with like Chalice of the Void and shit like that. You don't really need Ragavan. Ragavan doesn't advance your game plan at all. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He's just a 2/1. He gets eaten by your own chalice. He's not a aggressive enough threat. Blah 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 blah. None of that applies to Root Maze with stasis.
Yep.
So I don't know. I don't get it.
Root Maze doesn't cannibalize any other part of your deck.
No, it's the only thing it does is it makes the mana a little bit worse.
It does, which, and that is real.
But we've already solved that problem, and this guy is also running. So how many lands do you run? 22? Because 18 islands and 4.
Yep.
So he's got 24 lands in here. Two of them are the Treva's Ruins. So guess what those two cards are in your list?
Yeah.
Elvish Spirit Guide.
Yep, I've already got them. And I don't waste the time with... I don't waste a land drop that I can't bounce with Gush for it.
Right. And you don't open yourself up to, like with Treva's Ruins, Wasteland, which is everywhere in the fucking format. Like, I could in... There's a world where I could see you running Flooded Strands just for the shuffle effect, because you do have some cantrips. And for mild thinning. I don't know if it's worth it or not, but like I could see the argument there.
Mm-hmm.
Because you got the four portents. Like if you had like even two more reasons to shuffle, I could see running Flooded Strands as opposed to Islands.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's worth it with just portent, but I don't know. I don't know the math on that, like how often those two things would happen.
The other thing is like the life. Well,
the life matters.
Life matters. It does.
And that, that's what I mean. Like you get a shuffle, but it costs you a life.
Mm-hmm.
So like that's the tension there is like, I don't know if that one life is worth every time you get a Flooded Strand, you lose a life effectively to occasionally shuffle off a portent.
Yeah. I don't think it might be something we play with at some point, but yeah, I don't instinctually, I'm not excited about that or interested in it. I like the pain-free mana base. I like the consistent mana base, all blue mana. There have been a couple times where I, you know, am having a hard time getting the mana for a Root Maze, but it's not a concern really often enough.
Well, and most of the time, when that happens, you can just slam a stasis to just grind the game to a halt and buy time.
Yeah.
Like, not and every time you cast stasis has to just be game over.
And if I'm hiding, if I'm hiding behind a stasis, I usually have a Forsaken City anyway. So now all I need to do is, use my Forsaken City, pay for my stasis, that's all I have. Just draw until I get a land drop, then I can play a land next turn, you know, use Forsaken City to pay for Root Maze, use the island to pay for stasis, then we're good to go.
Yep. So, yeah, I think we have tuned the main 60. It's within one card.
Yeah, it feels good. It feels really good. It's
the debatable
good.
Fucking Root Maze. The sideboard will need to work on. Obviously, we tried the Mystic Penitent. I don't think we need him anymore. I think the Root Maze just solves the problem without bothering with him.
Yeah, Root Maze made the Mystic Penitent not important.
And then, so that frees up slots for Anul, which I think would be fine.
Yep, I like Anul. I've been fucked over by... And sphere resistance a couple times. Hitting enchantments also is impactful.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the format's just riddled with artifacts and enchantments. Mm-hmm. There's just no other way. So, like, let's see. Goblins.
What do I have for cheap? Well, no. I say, what options are there for cheap counter spells for, like, disenchant? But Dispel isn't legal, is it?
Dispel isn't. There is a cool one. It's not great, but it's called Disrupt.
What is that?
I want to get you the exact text, but I know roughly what it does. So Disrupt, this one's a little a corner case. Counter target, it's four spike. So it's counter target, instant, or sorcery unless they pay one, but you draw a card.
Hmm. Is it one mana or two?
It's one. It's one blue.
Hmm. I would be interested in playing around with that. Replacing itself is very powerful.
Right. Now, and like you're actively attacking their mana, and I personally have been in the situation where it's like I have two or I have three. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like you're on such tight margins with your mana that it's just like if, for example, say they go to disenchant your stasis and like you can get them to like even pay more mana, like because there's timing on a lot of this stuff where it matters. So like I don't know, dude. Disrupt seems reasonable. Whether or not it's good enough, I don't know.
The number of times that Daze stays incredibly powerful or is made incredibly powerful into the middle / late of the game was surprising. Because mm-hmm. like Daze is one of those cards you just kind of expect just to get bad as the game goes on. And it does, but like once you kind of get a stasis thing going, it immediately gets good again because every single mana counts, and a lot of times your opponent can't wait to get another land to be able to try and go for it.
Yep.
So yeah, I'm really in love with the idea of a one mana four spike that draws a card.
Yeah. Now again, it is only instants and sorceries, but for the most part, that's really your only concern.
Pretty much what I care about. The only like there's that Ukitabi. What's the orangutan?
The orangutan. Yeah.
Like yeah, there's the orangutan that does it.
But he only hits artifacts. So like he can get your Black Vice. Yeah, he only hits artifacts. Yep. But there are other creatures as well. So like elves will frequently run a Druid Lyrist, which is a one mana 1/1 that you can pay a green, tap it, and destroy an enchantment. And there's also Scavenging Folk, which is the same thing for artifacts.
What's that stupid morph creature you always get a hold of?
Yep, there's Nantuko Vigilante.
Fuck that card.
That card's great.
It is.
But, I mean, to be fair, I'm paying fucking five for a disenchant.
I mean, yeah, but it's elves. Like, are you really paying five mana? You didn't work for that five mana.
And stasis, like, playing against stasis, you work for the five mana.
Yeah, but it's bullshit is what it is. I'm on the banned survival train. Not because it needs to be banned. I just don't like playing against your fucking whole deck.
Right.
I do. Yes. It does get. I'm not saying it needs to be banned. And I don't think it does. I do get Karn vibes from it, though. I really do. Where, like, it comes down and I'm like, God damn it. I have to contend with every silver bullet they put in their deck. That's very annoying.
It sure is. But at least I don't not allow you to untap.
That's true. Yeah, I do still get to untap. I mean, in fairness, you kind of do stop me from untapping because you usually kill it on my
upkeep. Oh, yeah. Yeah, the big thing is with elves, if elves is doing its thing, you don't untap because the game's over. Like,
yeah.
I don't have a ton of reps in it yet, so like I'm not very good at this particular build yet.
Uh-huh.
And I've tweaked it a couple times, so now I have a whole new build, so I don't even know. I haven't played a single game with it yet.
Yeah.
But like competent elves players, if you let them get a survival of the fittest, assuming they don't just draw dead for a couple turns, you're just fucked. Like the game is almost over the turn or two after you get a survival of the fittest. Mm-hmm. If it's in the middle of the game, like that's if they turn to the survival of the fittest.
Yep.
If it's fucking in the middle of the game where they can just
dump mana
pay two,
into
have
it.
Survival, and then they still have five or six mana, you're in deep fucking shit.
Yep.
Because everything's going to have haste.
Oh, my God. I know. It's awful.
Priest of Titania is pretty good when she has haste.
Well, yeah, when she comes down and just makes six extra mana, when she nets five, six mana.
So.
Cheater. Bunch of bullshit. I get cantrips, but I have to draw my cards naturally at least.
Yeah, that's true. I do love the survival of the fittest squee interaction. That's a lot of fun. What a decent amount of what I bought for elves was like, I need an old bordered squee. So, dude, this is gonna bring up a conversation we had a fucking long time ago. Not like years and years, but like I finally pulled the trigger on those old bordered, like the original DCI promo of two Priests of Titanias, because I have two.
Oh, yep.
Did you see Modern Horizons 3?
I did not.
They're reprinting Priests of Titania into Modern, and they're getting them into old border treatment. Which means it will now. It was. I saw it literally the day after I fucking ordered my cards.
Is it the Rebecca Guay art?
Yes, it's the exact same art.
I told you. I told you.
To be fair, I wouldn't want the new one anyways.
But did it drop the price of the old ones?
Yeah, I'm sure over time it might. But like, you know what I mean?
That's funny. Yep, I remember having that discussion. It was you, me, and Derek who were talking about it,
and you guys talked me out of doing it.
Yep, because it was like. They'll never, because it was like, oh, they'll never reprint Rebecca Guay art, and I think they had just done some Rebecca Guay art for something different, and I was like, I don't know, man.
Well, they shortly after that they were doing a promo for Wood Elves with one of her old arts. That's what it was.
Yeah. Yep.
And so I was like, oh, because like I thought they cut ties with her, but they hadn't. So I was like, well, if they've cut ties with her, then these particular ones are kind of on a pseudo reserve list.
Exactly.
They hadn't. So, and then once I found out they hadn't, I backed off. But like, to be fair, the new ones are going to look way worse than mine.
Oh yeah, of course. And there is value in having the old ones. Like,
oh, for sure.
Like, I buy the oldest card I can all the time, as long as it's not cost prohibitive, because there's just more value to having a card. Okay. So case in point. Like, I bought my Forsaken Cities, and I'm an idiot, and I bought the list reprint ones by accident. And Matt and I have talked about this. I don't actually care about the little list mark in the bottom corner. It does not bother me, really. But, like, they were a quarter for the list reprints, and they were they were 50 cents for the original Plane Chase ones. And I immediately went and bought the Plane Chase ones, because, like, if the cost is relatively the same, there's a very distinct value to me in having a card printed in 1997.
Well, that's the thing, is like, you can, when you buy the original printing of a Magic card is on its own pseudo reserve list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they, like, can't make it again.
They're not ever making another Squee that was printed in Stronghold or whatever. Yep. Like, they can make 100%. The exact same card, but it's not the same card.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's a lot of things in life right now that, like, you can get the modern equivalent or even a modern remake equivalent, but the old stuff is really expensive for no reason other than, well, it was made in 1975, and they can't remake the one that was made in 1975.
Mm-hmm.
You could pay a dude to make you the exact same thing, the exact same quality, but it's not 60 years old.
Yep.
I mean, like, the comparison I make is I have a couple anvils in my lower garage, and, like, they were made, like, between 70 and 100 years ago, and that is just so beautiful and cool to me. You could buy me... I had a brand new anvil that I bought, and I sold it because I didn't need three, and if I'm keeping an anvil... I'm keeping the old ones because I could buy a new anvil tomorrow. They're making them every day. They're not making Hey Bud and anvils anymore.
Yep.
It's the same thing. It's a heavy piece of metal with a hard steel piece on the top, but it's different. It also isn't the same thing.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm the same way with cards. And the funny thing is, a lot of times, even if it's just not monetary value, it's like nostalgia with me. It's one of the reasons why I don't mind the white borders.
Mm-hmm.
In this particular format, because it's just like, yeah, that's what Sylvan Library looked like when I played it, because I didn't have like Legends ones or whatever. You know what I mean?
But man, it's ugh.
And don't get me wrong, like I think some cards look very good with a white border. If I could, and I could just click on and off and go, my deck is all white bordered or all black bordered, mm-hmm. I'd probably have some decks that were white or black. Like, I think white cards look amazing with a white border.
Mm-hmm.
But like, fundamentally, I would rather have the Legends Sylvan Library, but I'm not going to pay hundreds of dollars for it.
Mm-hmm.
I'll pay 30, and I still get to go, oh, well, that's how these cards looked like when I was playing them back in the day anyways.
Yep.
Like, it's not that most of them look better than the black border. It's that it's not as big of a detraction for me.
Yeah.
Pre-modern, I want to get, like, that's the other thing. I want to have those five decks all old bordered, the ones I talked about earlier. Like,
yep.
That's my goal. It's like, I want to play basically tier one, plus elves in old bordered cards.
I mean, in fairness, like, it's easy because it's stasis and it's cheap, but I'm doing the same thing. Like, so example, I mean, like, well, it's hard to draw the comparison because, like, a modern days is 25 cents and an old days is $2. I'm paying 8 times the price for an old days, but my pre-modern deck will be old border. I mean, to the extent where, like, you know, I really want to have black border cards, I'm black bordering my stasis and black vices because it's just really hard to get a hold of black border stasis and black border black vice.
Yeah.
With the old border, with the old art, all that stuff. Because, like, I thought long and hard, and I may someday upgrade the black vices if they stay the main win con to the inventions, because I do think they're really pretty. And they're only like $20-$30. They're not very expensive for an invention.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I'm going to see how I feel about the black vices once we black border them. Because, like, I like the idea of having the deck that is, if you built it back in the day, if it was built 40 years ago, well, 25 years ago, this is what it would have looked like. Yep. I like that. It's cool.
But yeah, I've got a... So I just checked real quick. So, like, the Legends Sylvan Libraries are like $120.
Yeah.
Now... The nice thing is, I don't, whenever Gen Con or basically the next big Magic tournament that shows up in our mm-hmm. big city, I plan on going and I plan on trading a bunch of stuff. Like, I'm not going to, but if they have old bordered Sylvan Libraries, snap them up.
I'm doing the same thing. Like, I have my collection whittled down to, I have a stack of cards that are the valuable ones, and like trade in, they're probably worth like $1,000 or less, but they're like my last little bit of sellout, and I just, as soon as we have a tournament we can go to and I can vendor them, I'll probably just vendor them all at once. And I don't know if I'll cash out or if I will, you know, get some cards. We'll see what I want by then. But yep, I'm just waiting for a large event to go get rid of my stuff.
Yep, that was one of the reasons why I was fine pulling the trigger on those priests of mm-hmm. Titania, is I effectively traded for them. I took a hit to trade for them, but I effectively traded for them.
Yep,
like
it's all fake.
It's a
money.
Lot different. Yeah, it's just like, well, I traded 9 foils for $2,300 to store credit.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I used 200 of that to buy 2 really pretty Priest of Titania.
Jesus Christ, Matt. Yeah. It's been 90 minutes. We haven't talked about anything.
We've been talking about pre-modern the whole time. We talked about fucking, like, completely overhauling your stasis list.
I know.
It's
been rambling for 90 minutes. Isn't that crazy?
That's all our podcast is anymore. It's fucking rambling.
That's just funny to me.
Well,
as we bring this episode to an end, is there, before we begin our wrap up, oh my God, we never even shout our patrons out. You never passed it over to me. Oh my gosh. So,
Jake, how are you doing today?
Every week we like to give a shout out to our patrons for supporting us on the Patreon. People like Asphalt, Emperor, Ramblin' Rogue, Ashley, Eric, Monowolf, Ethan, CJ, Ted, Mumbledown, Rob M, Limit of Questions, Derek T, His Forest, and Jasper. Thank you guys for being patrons, for being a part of the show in a much more personal way. We do love chit-chatting with you guys on the Discord, all that stuff. I was talking about Helldivers earlier. I'm, you know, because some of them got Helldivers, I finally pulled the trigger on it and been playing it. But if you want to hear more about Helldivers, you'll have to tune in next week, because we're basically out of time, unless Matt has something he really wants to talk about.
Nope, just play pre-modern. That's all I...
Yep,
just
play. Just play more pre-modern. Play pre-modern. So,
it's a hell of a time.
We will... I think we'll start wrapping this episode up. We'll head over. We'll get some Patreon-exclusive content recorded. So you guys want to get another 30 or 40 minutes of us, you can join that Patreon tier and, you know, get some more content. But, Matt, unless there's anything I'm forgetting, I think we'll see everyone next week.
Nope, good enough. Have a nice night.
Welcome, step on in to the Cantrip Cartel. Jake and Matt chatting metagames while slinging some spells, casting elves, sipping on blue soup and parting some veils. Glimpse of nature once upon a time, they're telling the tale of the elvish visionaries on the Wildwood prairies, where the brainstorms are so fearsome, so scary, so legendary. Queer and rangers cross the sylvan libraries, for when the greens on zenith would parry the clouds and turn their swords into plows. Let them rotate the crops, abundant growth in the ground. Nourish the life from the loam until it flourished unbound. Seeds of innocence burnished all the birch Lorien mounds. Gaia's cradle exhaled, carved made of flowers unwound. Birds of paradise sang, tropical islands of sound. Allosaurus shepherd danced on dinosaurs stomping grounds. Jake and Matt pondered deeply all this magic they found. Through their visions doused in serum, they saw only for how to convey these magic stories aloud to the crowds, the masses. Make the voices heard, share the truth, the magic. Through ancestral visions, they felt compelled to draw every single card with the cantrip cartel. Draw cards with the Cantrip Cartel. Draw cards with the Cantrip Cartel.